Hello and welcome once again to the ALS Association Greater Philadelphia Chapter Podcast. My name once again is Tony Heil, the Director of Communications and Public Policy here at the Greater Philadelphia Chapter. We serve people in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, but our podcast covers the entire country and maybe at some point the entire world. But we're going to go for as much as we can at this time. If you've been listening to some past podcasts, you've heard from people with ALS, caregivers, even state legislators, and researchers. So we try and cover a wide variety of topics related to Lou Gehrig's disease and the work here at the ALS Association. If you want to get involved, before we start here with our latest edition, I encourage you to go to www.alsphiladelphia.org. And you can go to www.gpcwalktodefeatals.org to work at one of our 7 Walk to Defeat ALS events. And if you're listening outside of geography, you can always go to www.alsa.org for the Greater ALS Association. I'm excited for today's podcast. We're trying to provide some useful information to people with ALS and their caregivers. And one thing that people probably don't think much about when it comes to ALS is traveling. We have the 4th of July weekend coming up, the whole summer, and then, of course, down the road, there's holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas. So there's lots of times when people want to travel. And our guest today, Marcia Oberman, has some great background on the problems and complications that may come about with traveling as a person with ALS and their family, some ways you can make it more comfortable, and make sure that you're getting the most out of your travel experience and getting the best help possible for that. So, again, my guest today is Marcia. So, Marcia, thanks for joining our podcast.
Thank you, Tony, for inviting me to talk today about traveling with ALS.
Well, I'm really pleased to be here. And while I don't think we've met before, I know that you travel often to Washington, D.C., or you have for ALS advocacy.
That's correct.
And so you... Let's start off with making sure people know why you're an expert in this. You're not just someone that decided to do this yesterday. It was your son that had ALS, correct?
Yes, yes. Tony, I was a direct caregiver for my son, Eric. He was 29 years old at his passing, and he had ALS for 10 years, and 8 of those years he was on invasive ventilation. So on the ALS organizational side of things, in regards to myself, I actually volunteered for 7 years and developed and brought up the care services program here in Alabama. I also volunteered for 3 years as the clinic coordinator to bring our ALS care clinic live. So that involved quite a few years here now with ALS population, and I'm currently the Alabama chapter with the Alabama chapter as the ALS clinic nurse director for our ALS Certified Center of Excellence.
Well, I appreciate all you're doing in Alabama, and I really appreciate and am inspired by your son and yourself and your husband. I encourage everyone to read about Marcia and her son and family. It's amazing to me all that you not only did for your son, but continue to do. And it takes a lot of strength to keep doing that.
Well, I'd have to say, in many ways, Eric taught me more about, you know, my nursing profession and life than I may have taught him as a parent. So he certainly continues to inspire me. And again, trying to be helpful to others as, you know, family with ALS and patients directly.
Well, then that's a really great way to start. And again, we're here at the Greater Philadelphia Chapter, and we're really proud, of course, of our clinic services serving the hundreds of patients that we have here. But the work that's being done in Alabama and other chapters is phenomenal, and we really want everyone that has ALS in the country to get the best kind of care, and that's what you're helping to do down there.
That's right.
So, again, our focus today is on travel issues, and you had to travel a lot with your son and others. I know that you've gone to Washington, D.C. What inspired you to really tackle this as a dominant issue for ALS?
Well, you know, traveling for us it really started as a family issue. You know, we took a lot of family vacations. It was a big part of our family as far as creating memories, whether it was a day trip or a week vacation. And when Eric developed ALS with his younger age, still on course with that, he really had a lot more he wanted to see and do. He was very clear that he did not want to be confined or defined by ALS or being in that power wheelchair. So he still wanted to get out and travel. So, you know, again, his father and I took on that challenge of starting to learn, well, how's the best way to travel? An interesting thing about Eric, on his ALS walk to defeat team shirt that he wore for many years going to all the ALS walks, he had a logo of a bumpy van traveling between a couple of places that we traveled too often. The pictures were of the St. Louis Arch, Washington, D.C., Huntsville, and the beach. And with that picture, the words on his shirt said, "On the go with Eric O."
Nice.
Because we were on the road with Eric quite a bit traveling. So anyway, that's what his shirt said.
Well, and you guys certainly on the go. It sounds like you went to a lot of places in those many years. And as we know, with ALS, the disease changes. So you had to learn a lot of things along the way. It wasn't just, well, one day I learned this, and then for the rest of the time I knew it was up.
Oh, you're right. I mean, we learned things the hard way, as you sometimes do in this disease, unless you hear some valid information coming from others that know. Again, why I think your podcast situation that you're doing is just a wonderful way to get some useful information out there. But, yeah, we had to start with the most basic travel issues. You know, again, when Eric progressed to the power wheelchair stage, you know, generally speaking, wheelchair users across the country it's getting better and better for wheelchair folks, but you still have those 2-inch curbs that stop you in your tracks. You got gravel pathways that they really can't go on. So there's still a lot of the basics, I say, travel issues that folks in the condition with ALS have to overcome.
So let's talk about a couple of those basic issues. One, in terms of getting you out, like travel in terms of vehicles, and then two, those basic things I probably wouldn't think about, and I've dealt with handicapped accessibility before, at the actual locations, because those are, it's not like, well, we resolve this travel situation by getting a good van. There's a lot of complicated things right from the start.
You're right. Anything from, you know, getting the van that works for you, getting the wheelchair that works with that van, and then, again, getting out on the road with an ALS patient, they seem to accumulate, as we know, a lot of durable medical equipment, whether it's for breathing or eating or communicating. The number one thing that I think is a basic travel issue is cords.
Oh.
You have a lot of cords that you need to be organized enough to remember to bring for all that equipment to be plugged in for it to continue to be maintained, right? So we had several mishaps, so to speak, and learned the hard way because you forgot a cord here or there. But, you know, the cord and battery situation with all that durable medical equipment is something that you just need to get organized. And it's a big challenge, but you can do it.
So to keep yourself organized, do you do like a checklist or a color coding or it just because I know it's tough enough packing for a child, but my son doesn't have all those kind of technical needs.
You're exactly right. And that's my number one hint and tip that I like to pass on. You know, after we had a couple of trips that you forget this or that, which ends up to be a very bad day, I started making lists. I can't talk about lists. I started writing down everything that I used for Eric in a 72-hour period of time. And on my list, I categorized them into groups. That's probably a little bit of the nursing in me, but I think it also makes sense that, you know, you put all your nutrition supplies you need, your respiratory supplies, your mobility, your communication, your daily living, bathing, and so forth. So the list, at least for me as a caregiver, sometimes you are so overcome or charged with remembering a lot of things. So the list really provided a reference for me for safety, that I had everything, and also peace of mind. And in the end, it really made her life easier to travel.
And while it made your life easier to travel, I would guess that becoming that organized to get on the road makes it easier to do things at home, too, because now you've got a mindset of, do I have these things? And again, just thinking about myself, like, I'm like, do I have enough soap to last me the week? And I'm at the store. So.
Right, exactly. So, you know, actually, you make a good point, Tony. The list also, depending on a durable medical equipment company you work with, you have to keep, inventory, so to speak, for certain, for respiratory equipment and or nutrition or feeding equipment. So those types of lists, again, you can glance at all the equipment that you need to get you through the month. So it does provide an extra benefit on that side to have the list.
So, and right now as we're talking, I'm writing a list about your list. and we're talking about, like, you need to get prepared to go. So what are some of the things you need for your actual vehicle to get on the road? Because if you're going to go anywhere, you probably need to call a van.
Yes, you do need your accessible van, patients usually work on that pretty early. If they're getting to the power wheelchair stage, your power wheelchair assistive technology professional will probably help you know the types of requirements that you need in your van to either have a Q-strength to lock you down or a locking mechanism. But generally speaking, the van mechanism is like any other vehicle. It's just those locking mechanisms and the ramp getting in and out of the van are major components. Vans, again, come in all shapes and sizes, and some people like it when the power wheelchair person sits up in not the driver's seat, but the companion can see versus sitting in the back. But you can do it either way. Vans accommodate you in many ways in that direction.
So when you're doing that, you're a nurse, and so you have maybe a better understanding than most people probably do when they first are dealing with ALS. Would you recommend talking to your clinic director or your neurologist to figure out kind of things to be prepared for?
Definitely. If you're desiring to travel, whether it's a long, lengthy day trip or two or three nights all the way up to a week, I would definitely include your neurologist and your center team. Again, they're your team, another set of thinking, intelligent people to help you think of things that you might need on your trip. Anything from medications to thinking ahead of calling into national pharmacies if you need some new medication. One of the things that physicians do for you and that you need to request is they call it different things in different places, but we call it a medical necessity letter or a health certificate letter. And what that letter does that your physician provides is telling you, it kind of lists your condition, and then it also lists all the durable medical equipment you require on a daily basis. Otherwise you'd be in a life-threatening situation. So that is a letter that you want to carry with you when you travel. So the neurologist can really help you with that.
That is a great. That's a great idea for anything. It's almost like a medic alert bracelet, but bigger.
Right. And as I said, some call it a medical necessity letter. Other people call it a medical certificate.
So now another question I have, because you came to Washington, D.C. with your son, and we, from the Greater Philadelphia chapter, everyone drives or takes a train. It's not, we're able to get a lot of people there because of our proximity. People from around the country fly into D.C., and it's always impressive to me to see anyone in a wheelchair that can fly to Washington for advocacy. It shows their commitment to the cause. What are some of the things that people should think about when they're flying somewhere? Because that's a hardship.
That truly is. It takes a lot of pre-planning. Now, we traveled mostly by van, but we did travel a few times early in the course of the disease with their Eric on flight up to Alaska for a cruise. When you travel by air, the words you got to remember are airline and TSA. You know, for the mobility part of the travel, on our side, we went ahead and took a folding portable wheelchair and tagged it as baggage. And again, that provided Eric what I call rest and energy conservation time when he didn't want to walk long distances. But airlines do check power wheelchairs into the cargo, but you have to be careful, and you do need to learn the rules, and you need to talk to the airlines directly on that. So, you know, you do want to call your outbound airport and start that conversation. The other thing with traveling by air, they did allow us to carry what we call an extra carry-on besides your regular carry-on load, and we called it a medical backpack. And that's what we had. We had such things in there as Eric's ventilator, you know, the cord, suction machine. And again, we got that through security because we had our letter of medical necessity saying that he needed these things with him, at, you know, 24 hours at any time. So, again, a good idea to have that physician letter created for these travel experiences.
Now, I don't want to put any companies on the spot, but I would imagine that not all airlines are equal. Would it be good to if you're going to be flying, contact all the airlines that might be going to that destination and find out what their policies are and services are? Or, you know, do you think you'll be good as long as you're prepared?
You know, I think it would possibly be good to do a comparison just for customer service, is what you're looking for here. Somebody who can talk you through the system, give you details of what you need to do. And, you know, just as any company, one company may do that better than the other. But, you know, they do all apply by the same TSA regulations and federal laws, you know, to helping people with disabilities travel in a proper manner. But I would definitely do some comparison calls there.
Great. So, like you said, most of the time you traveled, it was by car, van. That's probably the easiest for any person with ALS. And I imagine, in addition to that, because of how long it takes to get to an airport, get back, and transporting, unless you're going thousands of miles, it might even be the most time efficient, because flying takes a lot of time.
Right, and you know, flying in many ways, even though it shortens your time, it kind of increases your stress and more difficulties involved. We found traveling by car kind of let us go at our own pace in many ways. And one thing that I do relate to people when I talk to them about traveling is one thing you need to realize is you have to allow extra time for rest for the ALS person as well as the caregiver. You need to space out events or tours or activities so it can be more enjoyable. You know, as a family member, have fallen into this. You know, you try to pack it all in, and you come home from your vacation kind of exhausted. But with an ALS person and family caregiver on board, you really need to try to not overplan the itinerary. You need to continue to do certain parts of normal routine that helps keep your ALS person balanced and healthy. And it all takes a little bit extra time. So if you plan some of those rest times during your travel, you know, everyone becomes less fatigued, and it's a much more enjoyable trip.
Yeah, and I think you subtly made a really good point there that everyone becomes less fatigued because travel is not just important for the stress of the patient, but also for the caregiver. If you're exhausted from traveling, then you're not going to be able to provide as good a care as they're going to need.
Right.
And I think about what you're saying. My wife and I, we have a one-year-old, one-and-a-half-year-old. We're going to have another one soon, in a few months, which is exciting. But we're going to Mississippi, not far from you, for a wedding next year. And it reminds me, you know, you think, oh, it'll be quicker to fly, but with these kids, it might be easier to drive because of all this other happenstance. So it might be good, if you're listening, to consider, if you're thinking about flying or driving, take everything into consideration first.
Right. And I see you making lists. for your two little ones here in the future, for sure.
Well, yeah, we do that now a bit, and it's our families live far away, so we travel mostly to visit family now. And this weekend, we're going to be driving to Rhode Island for the holiday, and which brings me to what I'm thinking of next, because I know all that's going to go into the hours of travel from Philadelphia to Rhode Island for taking our toddler. What are some things that people probably don't realize when they're going on an extended drive with a person with ALS? And not only with the drive itself, but with preparing the destination.
As far as the destination, that does take some pre-planning. And, you know, these days, most all of us get online and, you know, we try to, let's say if it's a hotel or a week at a specific destination, we try to go online and get the best deal. And that's certainly, you want to do that. But in the end, whatever your destination or hotel is, you need to call them directly to start telling them about what your expectation is in an accessible room. Came upon many a circumstance where what I considered an accessible room and what they considered an accessible room, just a handheld bar in the bathroom, mm-hmm. was not the same expectation, right? So I had learned over the years, I called the manager of the hotel and I told him the circumstance, and generally speaking, they were very nice, very helpful, and I would ask for them to take a picture of the room, basically the bathroom, and send it back to me before we arrived, because I really needed to know the situation of if I was needing to provide extra supplies or if we were going to be satisfied. One of the other things I also learned that, well, sometimes you get to a hotel and they change the room just because of booking issues that they've had, and we would unload all this equipment only to get to the room and it wouldn't be satisfactory. So before I unloaded any equipment, I went up to the room first to make sure that it was satisfactory, so we weren't doing a lot of extra hauling and frustration there for Eric.
Right, because if you did that, you might end up having to go to another hotel.
Right, right. And we never had to go to another hotel, but we did have to negotiate sometimes another room. But it's always good to get the picture ahead of time if you can, so then you know what you're dealing with. And, again, going to the room when you get there to make sure before you unpack everything.
That taking a picture of the room is probably the best advice I've heard so far today. And but sometimes people aren't going to a hotel. Here in the Philadelphia area, a lot of people go to the Jersey Shore or go down to the beach in Delaware, and they go to a beach house that they either it's theirs or family members. So are there ways, do you know people then that kind of prepare a place ahead of time and have a space that they know is comfortable?
Again, yes, in that circumstance, family, friends, you know, that you're going to a specific destination, if they can send you a picture, then you know what you need to bring sometimes in regards to extra bathroom equipment or supplies. But in that circumstance, I again want to kind of promote something that we use quite frequently. You know, our care service coordinators that we work with locally, our patients, can help you tag up with a local chapter in another state, an ALS coordinator, because there's durable medical equipment loan closets being, you know, inventoried by the ALS Association around the country. So, you know, with that coordination, they could actually provide you maybe some bath equipment or, you know, a transport wheelchair in that location, which would be very helpful as far as, you know, packing space and less things to take. So, again, that's one of our benefits of being a national organization, to have that chapter connection.
Now, I know we've had some people go down to Florida, and the Florida chapter's been really helpful because they've gone to Disney World. Are chapters, in your experience, really good at also helping people plan their trips to places that are more accessible?
We have a newsletter at our chapter. We call it Tips for our patients with ALS. And we have done articles over the years of accessible venues in the state of Alabama. And I have found, and I also use this, I went online to state websites, and all practically all of the 50 states have what they call a tourism state site, and they will tell you about venues that are accessible for the disabled. And, you know, one thing that we did, which was just so a great, exciting trip for Eric, we went to a cave, or what we call a cavern tour, that was totally power wheelchair accessible. And we found that on the state website. And, you know, who would think this beautiful natural wonder, or what you call geology formations of this cave, would be available to us with a power wheelchair? But again, we found it through the state tourism website. So again, those are some places to go checking out to see some of those vacation spots.
Now, do you think that having to put those things into consideration got you to go to places that you might not have gone to otherwise? You may have gone to the things that were at the top of your head and, oh, here's an option we would never would have done if we hadn't been thinking about all these needs.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, we went to the beach several times, and when you talk about power wheelchair and a ventilator, you know, the two of those, the words don't really mesh, do they?
Right.
Sand, power wheelchair, ventilator. But, you know, going on the website, we found a beach power wheelchair rental place. Now, again, that may not be available at all beaches. They usually have these, what they call PVC pipe type of wheelchairs, which are really hard to put in the sand. But if you had this option of a beach power wheelchair, that opens up the beach for you as a destination site.
Now, when it comes to power wheelchairs, I wouldn't think that about getting them onto the beach. But you do have to consider, no matter where you go, that there are appropriate outlets and that it's going to be able to take all of those needs, because you said they're going to have a lot of cords. And are there questions you should ask, or just know that they have enough outlets?
Right. You know, we carried several extra extension cords, 20-foot, 50-foot cords, because in wherever you are, a home setting, a hotel setting, you know, there's only limited number of, you know, outlets. And when you have that much durable medical equipment, you need to bring a power strip because you are plugging in a lot of this type of equipment. And one thing I might share with you, Tony, one thing that made our life traveling easier more than anything else was something I bought for $20. I bought a tall plastic 8-drawer rolling, and the key word there is rolling, container with 4 drawers about 4 feet tall that we would roll into hotels. It fit perfectly in the back of the van, and we used masking tape to keep the drawer shut. We ended up calling it lovingly the Tower of Power because it made our travel life so easy. So instead of, you know, packing supplies and equipment in suitcases and Ziploc bags, the Tower of Power had labeled drawers with contents separated by category. You know, medications were on the top, nutrition was next, respiratory supplies, and we could roll that in the room and be set up ready to take care of Eric. So anyway, that was just one of my tips. This $20 rolling cart just was a great thing for us.
Yeah, and that's something where you're in a hotel or you're at a house that you're unfamiliar with. Not only are you bringing something useful, but you're bringing some familiarity with you too, which is important.
Right, right, exactly.
So now when you get to a place, and whether you're in a regular wheelchair or power wheelchair or using a computer or eye gaze, do you have any tips for how to make sure that the person with ALS and the caregiver can get the most out of their vacation and traveling?
You know, I think for us, as in any family, there can be tension of everybody wants to do different activities.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we would talk ahead of time of who was wanting to do what over what time frame. And, you know, we agree to get on that plan ahead of time for the day, including, most importantly, rest times for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that just seemed to work for us to keep it like a balanced day for everyone.
That's important, and I think we should stress that again. Make sure there's rest times for everybody. You really want to take into account all the people that are going to be going on the trip. And you've talked to a lot of different kinds of families who are traveling, right? Whether it's a person, where it's with a child with ALS, or people with that have a big family. One person's got ALS, a parent's got ALS. So the dynamics are certainly different no matter who's going out, and you have to take that into account. And you, what do you say about making sure that the caregivers get a vacation out of this? Because I think that sounds like it's very important, too.
You know, and not everybody has the leeway to do this, but generally speaking, when you're traveling with an ALS patient, initially, you know, it can just be what I call it, a two-man show. You know, the a spouse, caregiver, and the person with ALS. But as it advances, it really needs to be a three-man show. And in that way, everybody gets some rest. If one person is tagged, you know, with doing something with the person with ALS, the other one can rest a little bit. So we did get into the habit of usually having three people on all our trips.
Three people, including your son, or...
No, two. Usually my husband and myself and my son.
Okay.
But I think you just need those two extra folks besides the person with ALS, so you know you have a tag team going on.
And would you recommend that if you know that you have family that's supportive or friends that are supportive, trying to get a bigger group than you might otherwise, so that you can divide needs and responsibilities?
Oh, I think that would be a great thing. And, you know, especially if you're going to a family reunion or a family place. I mean, again, it's kind of talking at the beginning of the day what everybody wants to do and, you know, then redirecting how everybody wants to help in regards to the person with ALS, you know, extra needs. Because I think that fulfills everybody's responsibility on a family trip of interacting with each and other, really create the memories. So...
And, you know, you bring up a good point that I think when you go to a family reunion event or a big party, families generally want to be helpful. So it's good beforehand to lay out some rules and expectations so that everyone kind of knows how to be helpful and be respectful of each other.
Correct. And, you know, sometimes that is very hard for the primary caregiver and the person with ALS to let go a little bit. But... You know, we talk to and educate caregivers quite a bit. You know, the ask for help tells people specifically what might be helpful for you, you know, whatever it is, large or small. And you also have to really talk with the person with ALS to say, you know, if this is helpful to your caregiver, then in the end, they're going to be restful and be able to help you much more directly, too. And again, that education is easy on some couples in ALS, others it takes a little bit of working, but you really need to let people help you, be involved, and let them give back to you, because a lot of these people have given to others, so it's their turn to accept the giving that's trying to be, you know, given.
Right, that's a good point. It's hard a lot of times to let go and to accept that other people want to help. One thing I'm thinking about is that this weekend I'll be going away, and it might be hot. Obviously, we're going to be talking about traveling all throughout the summer, vacation with families. Are there any things that people should keep in mind for weather, whether it's the heat in the summer, or I know it doesn't really get that cold in Alabama necessarily, but keep in mind like cold if they're going somewhere else in the wintertime, stuff that they should keep planned?
Definitely for heat in Alabama, you know, I recommend a lot of different things. Of course, they have to be, you know, wearing cool clothes, accessible clothes that are easy for them, potentially for getting off and on for bathing or hygiene, bathrooming needs. But also, you know, there's a lot of what I call sports equipment out there that they have cooling scarves, wet washcloths, actually folded up and frozen and put in your cooler, is a good thing to have for anybody who's having a heat problem, but especially for, you know, a person with ALS, if they're at a picnic, they get a little cool, you know, those are things that you can apply to their neck or their face or whatever and help them cool down a little bit.
And those can be kind of affordable things that you can get. You don't necessarily have to go to a medical supply store. You might be able to get at Target.
Exactly, exactly.
Because I love going to Target.
Yeah, yeah.
It's right by my house. Are there any other affordable or small things that you would recommend that people buy to be prepared for traveling shorter, long distances? We talked about the drawers. We're talking about lists. Are there any things that would be great to just, you know, you wouldn't think about this, but make sure you have these kind of things handy?
The other thing I would recommend, you know, besides the long power cords that you take with you, is what I would call a heavy transfer blanket. We actually had what we call a portable Hoyer lift. They make quarter lifts that will actually break down, and you can carry them in the van. They're really nice pieces of equipment. But what happens with any type of equipment, it can either malfunction or the battery doesn't work. So you're left in this holding situation of how do you transfer your patient, or maybe the Hoyer lift doesn't fit under the bed or the chair that you want to go to. So we always took along, you know, what I call a sturdy but thin blanket to be able to transfer Eric at a moment's notice, even if he was out and about without the Hoyer lift present or if we needed it as an emergency. So just one of those things to have a safeguard.
And that's something that you can get multiple of, keep one at home so you don't lose it on your trip.
Right, exactly.
Well, that's great. Is there anything else you think people should just keep in mind to make sure their travel is stress-free? Because I'm learning a lot here.
It's really the list. The pre-planning of the list and making some phone calls ahead of time. Don't assume anything on the other side destination without at least making a couple of phone calls. And there are a couple of good resources I could probably relay. My top two websites that I really have enjoyed is one is called SATH, S-A-T-H, and it's Society for Accessible Travel and Hospitality. They actually have some great travel tips and links and information. And the other one is Accessible Journeys. To kind of review those types of websites gives you ideas and more questions, of things to prepare for.
And we'll make sure to link those here on our podcast, make sure people can find them, read about them, learn about them. And Marcia, is there any way, if people have further questions, can they contact you?
Yes. Currently, my contact information is going to be Marcia, M-A-R-C-I-A, Oberman, O-B-E-R-M-A-N-N, at comcast.net.
Well, great. I think there might be some people who have some extra ideas, some tips. If you have some things you want to add to our discussion, feel free to email me, tony@alsphiladelphia.org, and Marcia, put them on our social media pages, and maybe those things that we can learn from, too, because everyone's got something you're learning from. I'm sure you, Marcia, have learned from a lot of families with ALS throughout these years.
Definitely. Passing the information on is just a valuable resource for everyone.
Well, I really appreciate this educational opportunity with you. I think that our folks are going to get a lot out of it. So thank you, Marcia Oberman, for sharing a lot of your knowledge here today.
All righty, and thank you. And I hope everyone has some great family time on some traveling in the future.
Great. Well, in addition, you can go to www.alsphiladelphia.org to support the Greater Philadelphia chapter. You can find other chapters from across the country, both to support them and to get resources if you're going away on a trip, like Marcia has spoken about, at www.alsa.org. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, and even Vine and Tumblr. I just updated that today. All at ALS Philadelphia. So look for more podcasts on iTunes at ALS Philadelphia and at www.alsphiladelphia.org/podcast. I just said our name a lot of times, but I appreciate everyone listening, and I hope that you get a lot of information and happy travels for all.